Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jot Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jot Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. What up, what up, what up? Episode 105 of Jacques Talk. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. What's the sit rep, dog?
Let's see here. We are 51 seconds in, and we are 5x5. Operation Jacques Talk is a go. And you sound very fired up today.
Oh, I am lazy as hell, though, because I was watching some show the other day, and Lord knows I cannot remember what it is, but I heard the dude say, what's a sit rep? And I started to get up and tape it, and then we could put it in the blip, and you could just punch the button up, because I thought that would be funny, but I was too lazy, because it was a late night TV show I was watching, to get up and do all of that, so... But the sit rep does appear in some movie I was watching last week. This is episode 105 of Jacques Talk. This is very challenging. Number five, who come to mind?
What's the kicker? What was the kicker? No. Number five.
Man. Okay, I ain't gonna lie to you, dog. I didn't know no fives. I thought Clint Sterner might have been a five. But no fives came to mind.
What about the kicker that we got from the Colts?
He was 13.
He was 13, all right.
So I had to look it up. And to the best of my knowledge, there's only one dude who rocked number five.
You got me, dog.
Okay. He on the team right now, punter Brian Anger.
Wow.
I felt a certain kind of way, but I was like, hey, it is what it is, dog. What can I say? Number five, Brian Anger, 13 years in the league from Cal. So for those of you who want to know what Cowboy rock number five, there you go. But let's move on to bigger and better things, man. I want to tell y'all, Jacques Talk Live premieres Wednesday, the 22nd. That's Wednesday, a few days from now, 2 days from now to be exact. That's where I have a bunch of... It's a YouTube show on my YouTube channel, The Real Jacques Talk. We're going to have conversations with Cowboys from every era, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the aughts, and up until some of your current day Cowboys. The debut episode is Wednesday. You want to check it out. All you got to do is go to YouTube, search for The Real Jacques Talk. My channel will come up, subscribe, and wait for the show to start. It's going to be a fun show. We're going to talk to Cowboys about some of their best moments in the Cowboys uniform, some of the things that shaped them on and off the field. And if y'all know how I get down with interviews, then it's something that you don't want to miss. It'll be great. Did I send you the trailer, dog?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember. I sent it to only a few people, but I figured you was on my circle. What is it? My tree of trust. But I've been so busy lately, I couldn't remember. Now, that being said, remember, if you guys are ever involved in an accident, somebody else's negligence has caused you some pain, some suffering, what you got to do, man, is pick up the phone, call 972-934-8900, and let Greening Law go to work for you if they take your case. And I'm telling you, they take your case, because all you got to do is pick up the phone, call the number, give them your details. And if they take your case, it has been a celebratory day for you, because Greening Law, they take care. I was trying to figure out a good way. They literally take care of everything involved in the case so that all you got to do is focus on yourself. They focus on, if you need a doctor, they'll set you up a doctor's appointment. You just show up and go. If you need a specialist, they'll set that up. You just show up and go. And they do all of this stuff so you can really focus on yourself, because they want healing and renewal to be your two biggest priorities. I mean, they really do. And with those are your priorities, that means you can get your mind right, you can get your body right, and then ultimately you get your life back. And that's what's important to them. And that's why they are the people to call if you're ever involved in an accident. Somebody else's negligence has caused you some pain and suffering. Here's the deal. Whenever you go through a process like that, if you've never done it, these things are long and tedious. They're anxiety filled. And you can, you know, they can really run you ragged unless you got somebody like Green and Law rocking for you. In that case, all you literally have to do, is follow their instructions. They'll tell you when to walk and when to run and when to turn left and when to turn right and when to hold still. You do all of that, it's all good, baby. Now, I like to tell people this all the time, dog. You don't got to take my word for nothing. Go to the website, greenandlaw.com. Look at all the awards Robert Greening has won for his clients. Read the reviews that his clients give. You ain't got to take my word for nothing. Go read it for yourself. And then if you got to make a decision, then you know the obvious answer becomes clear. Call 972-934-8900 and let Greening Law go to work for you. Dude, the Dallas Mavericks. That was a wild. You know what, man? I'm just going to say it again. I'm really not throwing shade, but I guess I am. The reason I can't watch, this is just me now, The reason I can't watch college basketball is because of what I watched yesterday with NBA basketball. Those dudes are so good on both teams. That fourth quarter was phenomenal with the shot making, with the defense, with all of that going on. I mean, it was a phenomenal game. Would have been very, very, very disappointing had the Mavericks lost. But the game, if you step back and just look at the game was just phenomenal, man. All those guys were balling. Thunder had three cats over 20 points. The Mavericks, I think, had three over 20. It was just great basketball. What'd you think?
I don't make the comparison between the two. Like college football, pro football.
No, college it's just basketball with me.
I'm just saying, basketball is just totally different. The defenses are different. The players are different. You're going to have probably, to kind of go with what you're saying, you're going to have, like, out of both teams, you're going to have four good players on college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
So it's okay. It's just a different game. You know, you got guys that'll never go to the show. But once you get to the show, it's on and pop.
Yeah, it's that's what I mean. It's a different game. It's a game I don't like. Because I like greatness, and this is, the players in college basketball are learning to play, or they've reaching their apex, and the best players don't play in college basketball anymore. They go to the NBA, or they go, you know, G League or somewhere. So it's a, but my point is, the game is so good at the NBA level, it's hard for me to watch anything else. It's like when I got into Premier League soccer, it was hard for me to watch the MLS because the Premier League was so good, everything else just seemed like a step down. That being said, the Mavericks, what a game yesterday. When did you lose hope and when did you get it back?
Let's see. When it was 94-90?
That's when you got it back?
No, that's when I think they was up 94-90.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if we can close this out.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. When they was
You thought the comeback was coming when they was down 17?
No, I'm saying when they was when Oklahoma was up 94-90, and we had some time left. I mean, there was some time left. There's always, you know, I thought Oklahoma had a big run left in them.
Right.
So I just thought, well, you're going back to Oklahoma City. You know, so it's gonna be a game seven.
I thought it was a. I told this to my son because we were watching the game. I can't remember when I told him this. It was probably early. It was probably sometime in the first half, late in the first half, before they went on that massive run at the end. I said, you know what, man? This reminds me of the Mavericks when they lost the other day, when they were up 14. I mean, when they were up 14 and blew it. I said, because Oklahoma City got off to a great start. And the Mavericks keep coming back, and every time they get within three, they surge again and go back up by 12. Every time they get within five, they surge and go back up by 11. I said, so they keep surging, but they can't put a long enough surge together to make it matter. I said, but I wonder if they'll come back and get them in the fourth quarter just because the game feels like it's playing out like it did the other day because Oklahoma City hadn't buried them yet when they had a little bit of a chance to do it. Now, I was not thinking that at halftime. But the NBA is such to me, even if you're getting smoked at halftime, it's always about can you make a run in the third quarter and just be within shouting distance going into the fourth quarter. Because the way they hit these threes, it doesn't take much for you to take 9 points off a lead real quick.
Well, Shea started out 1-7.
Right.
He started out 1-7 in the third. That's what got the match. I just thought he can't play that bad the whole time. That's why I thought, well, he's going to get hot. And he did. And I don't know if we can hold him. But he can't stay, you know, he can't stay cold the whole damn game. I mean, the whole second half. As good as he was, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, yeah, it's going to be a run right there. I just thought, okay, they up by four. He going to get it together. And then it just became back and forth.
I know. It was a phenomenal game. Mavericks showed a lot of heart, a lot of toughness. They were down, I think, 7 to start the fourth quarter. They didn't tie it till about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And, you know, there was never – I mean, even then – because a lot of times you feel like, you know, Luka comes down and, you know, he was like, oh, we finna tie this game up now. I'm finna go to work right now. And hit that jumper and did his cursing out of himself or the crowd or his opponent, whoever he be cursing it. And, you know, a lot of times that's when you surge ahead because you finally got there. But Oklahoma City answered, man, and that began the back and forth that was just riveting. Because I watched it again this morning, and I was thinking to myself, I said, hey, man, the Mavericks won it. You watching the game like you don't know who won because it was so good.
Yeah. I don't know. It's one of them things where you biting your fingernails. It's like, well, what's going to happen? You know what I'm saying? If the outcome is decided already, it's like, all right, man, let me go on. Check this thing out and then go give me something to drink and go about my business. But it's one of them things where you just hang on to the end. And that's the best basketball right there.
No, so it was a phenomenal, phenomenal ending by the Mavericks. And, you know, Kyrie, Luka with the hug at the end because and we're going to get into Derrick Jones and P.J. Washington and Derek Lively in a minute because they all – had massive roles in the fourth quarter. But I thought Kyrie was aggressive from the start. Even though he only shot 8 from 20, he was aggressive from the start. Luka was efficient for most of the game. And then in the third quarter, they combined for 20 when the Mavericks had that 16-0 run to really make it a ball game again.
Luka had a triple-double.
Yeah, 29-10-10, third in a row. Yeah. I think he's the first guy in the NBA history to have 3 consecutive triple doubles.
Well, we just kind of pushed that aside as efficient. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a big deal, but it's not a big – you know what I'm saying? It's crazy. A triple-double is not the first thing we talk about with him.
Part of Luka's greatness is I think he averaged 34-9-9 this year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what he do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was but, you know, the thing about it, that's why I made the point of when they were down by 2 and they got the rebound, he brought it up to court. There was no doubt that, hey, y'all, I was like, either he finna take that 3 from the left wing and try to take the lead, or he finna go, but he's going to take the shot and he's going to make the shot because it was that kind of moment. And Luka has showed folks over the years that he's that kind of dude. No moment is too big for him. He recognizes the moment that not every player does. And he's like, okay, this is a moment. I'm finna take this thing and we either finna get the lead or we finna tie it up. And to me, that was really, I mean, he was so aggressive and assertive on that one particular possession that I wasn't even surprised when it went down. But, you know, that's all about what makes great players, man. The ability to recognize that and the ability to execute at that moment. And, you know, that's why I said the Mavericks have been dangerous the whole playoffs. Like, I have no idea if they're going to win the title or not. But when the games are close and they're at the end, not even kind of role players have been playing very well, but they have two guys who the moment doesn't bother them. They're not affected by it. And it really becomes whether they make it or miss it, and it has very little to do with you as a defensive player because they're so good.
Yeah, I think another thing is that they recognize, what I recognize about the Mavericks is that they don't go in the tank. No matter how bad they get whooped, no matter how bad they quote unquote choke, they gonna come back the next game and they gonna forget about what happened the day before or the game before. And that's the resiliency that you need to be a champ. I don't know if they're gonna be champions, but they playing like somebody that's, that wanna be champion.
Yeah, I think you know, a lot of that comes from the head coach to me, because what have you seen from the head coach the entire season and now in the playoffs? His demeanor hadn't changed. Now, Jason Kidd did say the other day that the team gets its feeds off his personality and his demeanor. That's what he said. And so he said, I try to keep an even keel to make sure that they stay on an even keel. And so, you know, I find it interesting with Jason Kidd. And I haven't been around to ask him. But, you know, his standard answer during the regular season, why are you playing Tim Hardaway Jr. so much? Because he was really struggling. Well, we trust Timmy. We need Timmy, but we trust him, blah, 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 blah. And when you've asked him about anybody who struggled at any point during the season, he's been like, we trust him. We think he can hit big shots, and we trust him. But what I've noticed in this series per se, what I've noticed is what happened 2 games ago. Dante Exum was struggling. Jalen Hardy took his spot and played his minutes. Tim Hardaway, and I'm not a big overreaction guy. I understand that players are human. They have bad games. They make dumb decisions. It's just part of being human. You're not going to be great every time you play unless you're Michael Jordan or Luka Doncic for the most part, or one of those, you know, two or three, four best players in the game. Everybody else will struggle and slump from time to time. But Tim Hardaway Jr., dog, was just awful the other day, even by my standard. And I have a lot of grace for athletes. He was just awful. Dog, Jason Kidd was like, hey, man, I gave you a long enough opportunity to show me what you could do. Your ass is finna sit right now. He played 6 minutes the other day. And I think that's what happens when you give guys all year to prove themselves, and when you give them as much opportunity as he gives them, when you make a move, there's nothing to say. They just go accept the move and stand on the sideline and cheer their teammates, because they know in their heart of hearts they've had every opportunity to do what they do. And I think players appreciate that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right, because it's like we've been saying about Tim Hardaway, particularly you, the whole time, is that, hey, when he hot, leave him in there. When he ain't, he ain't. And that's exactly what you've been saying about Jason the whole year we got to move around if you ain't doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Kyrie don't have nothing. Well, Kyrie got something to prove a little bit, but everybody on that Maverick team got something to prove, and in particular the coach too. You know, his name was mud for a little while as a coach, and now here we go. You know, and Maverick people in Dallas didn't appreciate him that much, but damn if he ain't doing what he's supposed to do. Damn if he don't look pretty good, you know.
Now, you know, for somebody who gets criticized for not having much emotion and being a robot out there, when Derrick Jones Jr. hit that fallaway jumper, one of the prettiest shots you'll ever see over Chet Holmgren, and he fell on the ground and slid about 5 feet, did you see who picked him up and threw his ass back on the court? I mean, for somebody who's like, he's not very emotional, he looked like he's pretty damn emotional right there to me.
He ain't emotional. It's just underneath, man. It's that quiet fire, man. That's all.
That's, you know.
That's Jason.
That's what I'm saying.
That's Jason.
He's, you know, his whole career has been marked by being a competitor. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what people have always said about Jason Kidd. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the ultimate competitor, blah, 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 blah. You don't be the ultimate competitor as a player and then not be the ultimate competitor as a coach. What he is, I think, is in a league, you know, that has a, or, you know, in a position that's noted for people being screamers and yellers. He's much more of a Tony Dungy approach, much more of a Tom Landry approach. And that just seems odd in a society where we're used to people screaming at the top of their lungs.
And but people, he's that now. Early on in his career, in his coaching career, especially specifically with Milwaukee, they said he was rough on him. And I think he
you know what's interesting about that, and I don't know the answer. I need to try to find the answer. He was like that behind the scene. I don't know if he was like that on the sideline.
Probably not. Probably not.
I mean, I really don't know.
Remember him. I don't remember him being like that. I probably watched a handful of Milwaukee games because I was watching everything back then. But it was more behind the scenes. But I'm just saying,
yeah, behind the scenes, I know he was a madman.
Yeah, his temperament was that. But you don't feel that with this team. You don't feel like that. These guys don't feel like they've been tongue-lashed to death. You know, they just don't.
One of the interesting things I saw was at some point, I think it was the play where Derek Lively gets the dunk over Holmgren, and he's on the ground, and they show Derek Gafford flexing. And I'm like, Gafford ain't played the whole fourth quarter, and he don't really care right then. You know what I mean? And to me, that's a sign of a team that's truly together. And we've been saying this for a minute about the Mavericks.
Man, Gafford played in Washington. Okay. he played with them damn Wizards, man. You know, he could be at home right now watching other people. You know what I'm saying?
PJ Washington.
Sometimes it's where you at.
Yeah.
Rather than where you been. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, okay, I could be here. I'm cheering my boy on. We about to win this thing. He is the king of meaningless basketball and with the Washington Wizards down.
Yeah.
I can't think of too many other teams that's worse.
No, there's a lot of truth to that. And so, but it's a vibe that they give off. Now, that's not the number one thing you need to win a championship. It might not even be in the top three or four. But at some point, when you really have a close-knit team like that, it can help you in the intangibles. And, you know, because you actually hear Luka and you hear Kyrie talking about it, which seems, I don't want to say odd, but I don't know that I've ever heard a team, and I'm trying to think, right? I don't know that I've ever heard a team talk so much about positivity. Like, no matter what happens, Kyrie always keeps it positive, you know, da-da-da-da-da, it's always positive. And, you know, it's just not a phrase you hear with teams as much as I've heard it. You know, I mean, there are different ways to say it, but I think that they really are propping each other up right now. And to me, now I'm the jaded sports writer, but to me, it's the kind of thing that just kind of happens organically over the course of a season, and it happens during that season. And because everything's kind of I don't want to call it a magical feel, but it's got that feel to it. And then once the season ends, it kind of dissipates. And I don't know if you'll ever be able to capture it again because of the circumstances and everything that brings people to that point where they're really vibing for each other.
I'm going to give you the best example of that. The Philadelphia Eagles that played Kansas City in the Super Bowl, they was like that. And I always say winning and alcohol, the combination of winning and alcohol, that make them lovey-dovey feelings on a good team. Now, what happened to the Eagles the next year when they was whooping people the first half of the season and then they was not whooping people, you know, getting you know, they was a fraud. Everybody turned on each other. There's a whole lot of dysfunction, and they start drinking by their damn self. And there you go. That's what I'm saying. So it's winning. Winning creates a lot of that. I can think of the Kevin Garnett Celtics. They was like that. Everybody was loving on each other, and Doc was the best coach in the world, and Rondo was the guy, and everybody. You see what I'm saying? That winning, winning, all of that cures. That winning cures a lot. Winning cures a lot, especially when people count you out. You know, they was talking about in the interview, talking about it. Kyrie's interviews are so much better. He's so much smarter with now, and so much more mature now. And like I say, winning and people count you out, because today in today's media, people got to stand by what they say. And Luka and Kyrie was talking about getting a D grade when they traded, when he got traded from the Nets. The trade was a D from whoever was on the panel at ESPN, and they was talking about it. And Luka, Luka said, man, we don't care about that. You know, who cares about what they talking about? You know what I'm saying? Them dudes, like I say, the vibe is good.
Well, to me, the best thing about the vibe, above any and out of any and everything else we talked about the other day, is that you ain't heard none of them stories about Luka can opt out in 2 years. You ain't heard none of that because winning cures that, team that he likes cures that. I mean, I've heard Luka say once or twice, this team is special.
Yeah.
You know, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just need him to buy into what you're putting together, and you good. Because the worst thing, perhaps, in professional sports, I just thought about this, is a disgruntled NBA player, NBA star. Because them dudes have power that no other athlete has in North America. Like, I don't know what power the big-time soccer athletes have around the world.
What about baseball? What about baseball?
Nah, man, you locked into a deal for 7 years. Shut up and go play. And baseball is about, you know, I think what happens is, I mean, with just a very brief bit of thought, and we all know this to be true, one dude on an NBA team can make a difference that one dude, Mike Trout, can't make no difference. Neither can Ohtani together, as evidenced by the Angels never making the playoffs with two of the best guys in Major League Baseball.
Gotcha.
In the NBA, I put LeBron on your team in his prime, and you go from 20 wins to 60 wins, and you in the finals and competing for a championship.
Okay.
I take him off your team the next year, you back in the lottery looking for the number one ping pong ball.
Okay, so you got people. Okay, I get it. I get that.
And when, like, them cats ain't happy,
they like
them. I should just stay away from that. When them cats ain't happy,
you might want to do that. I don't know what you was going to say,
if we was Bo Monty Jones right now, we turn the music on, and I would tell Joe about these diva women. But we ain't going to talk about
that.
All that.
Yeah, you ain't lying.
We don't need all that. That's the whole point.
But let me interrupt you a second. I think when you LeBron, yes, okay, that's all good. But you fake as hell when you James Harden. And that's a classic example of what you're talking about. How that dude done got everything he wanted every time he went somewhere.
Right.
He been garbage in the playoffs.
But, you know, the bigger point is that if you are an NBA superstar,
mm-hmm.
and he was at one time.
Yep.
You do whatever you want, baby, is yours.
Yep. Who you want to play with?
Whatever
you
want.
Who you
want
to play with?
Who you want to play with?
Yeah.
You know what? I am tired of being a New Jersey Net.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna play here no more.
Hey, can we stay over an extra night in this town so I can party a little bit? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's what whatever, dog.
Doing. Yeah.
When you're an NBA star, because an NBA star, there's so few people who can do what they do. You just cater to them, man. You just cater to them. I mean, we've seen it up close. I mean, the NBA, their stars to me are above just about everybody else's stars in terms of impact. And that's why they had the power and control that they had. But I told Joe we were going to talk about this because I thought it was very interesting as I was watching the game yesterday. Like, I was telling my dude, while we were watching, I said, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. won the slam dunk contest just a couple years ago. He's like, what? I was like, yeah. He's like, I never even heard of him.
Nobody watches that.
I said, well, that's how far the slam dunk contest has dropped. But you're talking about how high he get up and how he could jump. That's why he won the slam dunk contest. But he joined the Mavericks. Because I was also talking to my dude about this. I was like, man, he made so much money this year. He's like, what you talking about? How much has he made? I said, oh, he got a one-year deal for 2.5. He's like, that's not a lot of money in the NBA. I go, no, man. He a free agent now at the end of this year. And he's going to get paid. Now, he's not going to get $200 million, but he's going to get a nice deal worth $20 or $30 million a year. And when you've been surviving on four teams or five teams in 6 years, and you've been scrimping, I got air quotes going, on the NBA minimum of $1 million or $750,000, which to me and you is a whole bunch of money. But to NBA player, that's like minimum wage. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like if we made $12 an hour trying to feed your family. But, well, maybe that's a bit extreme.
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying. Yeah. By NBA standards, that's chump change. Well, now he's finna get a significant raise, and he's earned that money, man. He's a versatile defender. They figured out ways to get him involved in the offense on lives. Somehow, in this series, he turned into a consistent three-point shooter, or at least a dangerous one who you must respect. And, you know, that you know he made a couple of huge plays the other day.
He looked like your cousin Ray Ray with that white T-shirt on, you know. He looked like your cousin Ray Ray playing at the doggone recreation center. Bruh, what's the uniform code with the white T-shirt, dog?
I ain't got no answer for that.
Well, you like that? You're a uniform guy. Is that okay with you? That's got to be a clash right there.
Yeah, no, I'm not really down for that, man.
Maybe it's a sign. Maybe it's a thing where he say, I'm gritty. You know, maybe it just reminds him to be tough. Because that's a terrible look right there.
There's nothing I can say about it.
You look like the old man at the wreck. You look like one of them young cats, old men at the wreck. You know?
Derrick Jones Jr. You know, he's been in the league since he was 19. Mm-hmm. So for that, he gets credit. But do you know how he came into the league?
No, about to find out.
Looks to me like he's undrafted free agent. Played at UNLV, so I didn't even know that. But he spent his years at Phoenix, then Miami. Spent 3 years in Miami, and then Portland, and then Chicago for a couple years. Never averaged more than 8 points a game. He did that in 2020 in Miami. Just got to be, you know, he's a career 31% shooter on threes, which is not good. But he hit 34% this year, which is the best he's ever done. My point is, he's made himself a player. And now he's about to turn 27. And all that work he's put in is finally going to get him paid, whether it's in Dallas or whether it's somewhere else. And I think he's the kind of guy, now I'm putting air quotes around this because money matters. He's the kind of guy where, okay, y'all found me. You know, he got a role in Dallas. And if you can pay me the right money, I'm good because I know exactly what I can do here. I know exactly where I'm going to get my shots. I know exactly what my role is. And he can really thrive here. And the Mavericks have been searching forever for these 3-and-D guys. And now all of a sudden, they got a team of them. They got long guys who are athletic, who can switch up and guard different people. Because Derrick Jones Jr. had Shea for most of the game when P.J. Washington didn't have him. And nobody's stopping Shea, but he did as good a job as you can do, I would think, to the naked eye. And so, you know, for a guy who's been the definition of an NBA journeyman with a career average of 6.7 points, for him to score damn near 20 points each of the last three games and play a significant role in the Mavericks advancing to the Western Conference Finals. Now, he on the biggest stage with the finals. Only other biggest stage is if you get to the finals in the next round. But he's going to be around. And, you know, I think it's just cool to me when you see guys come from where he's come, grind through the process, and put themselves in a position to be paid for the work that they've done.
Well, he's J.J. Barrera.
Okay.
Yeah, he's J.J. I mean, you know what J.J. meant to us in the championship.
What you mean?
J.J. was a player that you felt like played above his ability, and he was not really known, and he meant a hell of a lot to that championship team, especially against the Lakers. You know.
You know what, man? I got a random exit ramp to take very quickly.
Okay.
You know, I say that I'm taking this exit ramp because did we talk about this the other day? Like, why does Derrick Jones Jr. wear 55? That's such a raggedy number.
No, it's not.
It's a raggedy number on a slim, athletic guard. I mean, if you was a big, NBA players in the 50s, I just don't like it.
I know you don't like it. It's all good.
But I found out, I think, why he wears 55.
Why is that?
Like, I found out why Aaron Gordon wears 50 because that bothered me, too. Oh, you know why he wears 50?
Why is that, man?
Because he lost a dunk contest to somebody, And it was one of the last years that it kind of mattered, and it was a controversial loss. And he was like, I did all these 50 dunks in the prelim, and y'all give me a 49 or something, and I lost. And so that's why he wears 50, to represent the 50 he should have got in the dunk contest. And I said to myself, you know what? I can ride with that, dog. But I'm looking at Derrick Jones Jr.'s page on his stats, and he wore number 10 with the Phoenix Suns coming out of UNLV. And then he wore 5 with the Heat, probably because he couldn't get 10. Because his last year with the Heat, he wore 55. And we all know that 5 and 5 is 10. And so I bet he wears 55 with the Mavericks because he really wants to wear 10, and 10 is taken. So 5 and 5 is 10. Back to our regular schedule program.
Yeah. Right back on that.
Hey, man, some of that shit inspires me, interests me. I'm sorry. Just a naturally curious guy. Now, let's move on from Derrick Jones Jr., who played a key role in the Mavericks' win, because that bucket over Holmgren, man, was huge. Huge. Because it came off a block shot. I think Kyrie took it in the corner. He went and grabbed the block shot and then hit the fall-away jumper as he fell on his butt. Over Holmgren, that I think gave the Mavericks a 5-point lead at the time before Shea came down and hit a 3. It was, that was a wild stretch. PJ Washington, dog. You know, I don't know where to start with that guy, man. He was quiet yesterday. He'd been phenomenal in the series, but he was quiet yesterday until about the last 4 minutes offensively. Defensively, he was doing as good a job as he could do on Shea. And a couple times he either made him miss or he made him give up the rock because he didn't go for that series of really nasty fakes that SGA puts on you. But in those last 4 minutes, man, I watched this play about 4 times because I think it was it might have been the first or the second really big play he made because he's at the free throw line, made 1 out of 2 free throws. But that when he got, who was that? Derek Lively was at the line, made 1 out of 2. PJ went and got the offensive rebound, started the possession, and I think it kicked around to him, and he hit a 3 that tied the score. Did you see him get the offensive rebound?
Yeah, I think PJ give you a couple of things. Against the Clippers, he gave you athleticism. Against the Oklahoma, he gives you size and athleticism because Oklahoma wasn't very big. They was fast, but they wasn't big. It's just right. PJ is just the ultimate, what am I trying to say, the Swiss Army knife a little bit. He can do a little bit of everything. So, yeah, I saw the rebound. But, yeah, he was big. He was a big man against Oklahoma, you know.
Now, he was on that particular play. Like, I wondered if he waited all game for that move because it was kind of like I don't want to call it a true swim move, but he kind of moved in and snatched him back. And it was a huge play at the time, and then to hit the corner 3 and then come back, hit the 3 from the wing on the other one.
Well, he got physical. Oh, yeah. But he almost got too physical when he just ran through the screen.
Well, you know, at that particular time, I was like, dude, you can't do that, man. I mean, you've been playing with grit. You've been playing. I mean, come on, man. You just can't run a dude over like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's the competitive moment. You like, fuck off me, dog.
Yep.
But you just can't do that.
Hey, good. Once you let him out the corral, dog, he got to kick a little bit. You know, he can't, you know what I'm saying?
Let the beast out.
Yeah, once you let the horse out the corral, once you go outside, you know, he's going to kick the bull rider. He's going to kick him. So, hey, let's go. That's him. The same physicality he ran through the screen with, the same thing he did with the rebound. He just didn't call it.
He's another guy, to me, whose reputation has changed in 3 months. Like, there was nobody, I don't remember anybody going, oh, the Mavericks get P.J. Washington. There's a difference maker.
No, I sold him, think. I sure didn't like him, so, heck no.
No, I remember you didn't like him, and it wasn't just because he wasn't no good on 2K.
Well, you didn't want me, hey, last time I said something, you was like, stop it, but you know. We're going to leave that.
I was looking at his stats. Now, I find this interesting. He's literally played about between 30 minutes for the most part of his career in Charlotte. He played between 27 minutes and 30 minutes. And he averaged between 12.2 and 15.7 points. But here's his points per year, because I'm trying to make a point here. 12.2, 12.9, 10.3, 15.7, 12.9, 13.6 this year before he got traded. He was a very consistent player for them. Now, he did some things that the coach that he was playing for didn't like, and apparently they had some issues. But his numbers, just numbers now, were very consistent, whether it was scoring, whether it was rebound, whether it was assists. They were all, every year he played, they were almost identical. So he has a degree of consistency.
But imagine if he, if the main thing would have been the main thing for him. See, his he had off the court issues that was creating problems for him.
I'm unfamiliar. What kind of off the court issues he had?
Brittany Renner.
Oh, see, I didn't know. Was he messing around with her?
Yeah, I think he got a baby by her.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, PJ was living that life. You know, you're a young man, you get money, you're going to live that life. A lot of these cats doing that now. But right here.
You hit me to that game, man. You know what, man? Can I be honest with you, dog? Mm-hmm. I mean, just me and you here.
I ain't just me and you.
Be honest. Because you made a great point, man. It's just me and you here. Mm. And I can't speak for every IG model out there.
I'm worried about what the hell you about to say.
If you with Brittany Renner, man, I understand why you may have been distracted and not played your best basketball. Yeah. I wouldn't say that about every IG model.
Yeah.
But if you was with Brittany Renner, I could understand why you may have been distracted.
Well.
I really do.
The main thing wasn't the main thing. Yeah, you know I'm saying here. that's what I said when he first.
I got so much more respect for PJ Washington.
Hold up. When he first got here, you said, "Well, he at home." I said, "Hey, he ain't messing with them strippers, man." You said, "Oh, you stop it." I said, "Okay, I'm gonna leave that alone." But he's home. He less distracted. He making the main thing the main thing. And when you got a chance to win, why not? You know why not?
Wow. I don't really, as you can tell from my answer to this, I don't really get caught up in a lot of things that ain't what I'm interested in. And, you know, Brittany Renner is not, I had never even heard of Brittany Renner until she came and talked to, what you call it?
Hold up. So you seen her in person?
No, I wasn't there, but, you know, I seen the videos and stuff.
There you go.
You know.
There you go. Coach Prime had to come talk to the players.
Yeah, I see why.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, nah, man, it was, woo! Boy, I done got discombobulated thinking about that.
Come on now. Come on back, bro. That's what I said the first time. I said you need to leave them strippers alone. I guess I should have said Brittany Renner, but that's what I was saying. He was out there. The main thing is the main thing with him right now. And I'm sure the Mavericks and Jason talked to him. How you good? You all right? And like you say, he at home now. So maybe he done got that out of his system. And plus, it's 13 points a game is good enough for us. Because we got two guys can do that. Now, could that cat do everything else he's doing? Who the hell knew? I bet Calipari knew because he taught him probably a lot of that stuff. He did a lot of that stuff at Kentucky.
Right.
You know, and imagine what the practice is like in Kentucky.
For sure.
Yeah. You okay?
But he is,
you back now? All right.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry. All
right.
He was he was right on time, man. And then they weren't the prettiest free throw, but he figured out a way to get them in.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to keep it real with you, dog. We've seen it 1,000 times. It is hard to miss a free throw on purpose. Were you trying to miss it? We've seen so many cats who were supposed to miss it make it. And then he missed it perfectly off the back rim, make the rebound. I mean, it was perfect. And then, you know, the Thunder didn't have any, couldn't call any timeouts because they had used it on the challenge. We can rewind for a second. I've heard him criticized roundly, but if you're Oklahoma City's coach, do you take the challenge on that play knowing you're going to give up your timeout, or do you just ride with the foul and let him go shoot the free throws anyway?
I think you got.
You ain't got but 5 seconds to figure this out.
If it's a chance to lose it, hold it. You know, if it's a chance to lose the call, hold the timeout. I'm always a proponent of holding the timeout because you never know how the end of the game going to play out. The very end going to play out.
Right. So you wouldn't have challenged it?
No, I'd have held
it. I'm not sure what I would have done. I mean, at one level, I mean, if they don't challenge it, what's it going to be? I don't know what the rule is if they don't challenge it. Oh, it's just going to be a foul. I guess the timeout may have been more important because you're assuming he's making them.
Well, like you said, it's 5 seconds. You got 5 seconds to decide what you feel. As a coach, what you feel like. You know, people don't realize sometimes with them decisions, it's just critical. It's just right now. You know, you can armchair it all day, but sometimes it's right now.
Oh, that's what I said. Right, I said you ain't got but 5 seconds to decide what you're going to do.
That's what I'm saying. It's a field thing. So there ain't really no right or wrong answer.
Hey, dog, it ain't like PS5. You say, hey, we finna restart this game. No, ain't none of that. You have to make the decision and ride with it. I can see it both ways. You know, what's funny is, you know, a lot of times people want you to challenge all these calls in the first quarter about this or that. And then at the end of the game, you figured out that, oh, this challenge is not a new thing. I mean, this challenge is more valuable than maybe you considered. So, you know, that's all I'm talking about. But P.J. Washington has made himself a very valuable member of the team, a very valuable member of the Mavericks, and he should only get better. As he continues to live his life without Brittany.
Yeah, he at home. Yeah, he closer to home. That's a big thing right there.
That's, like I said, he's married now, so yeah. He's as settled down as an NBA player is going to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he's a huge contributor to the Mavericks, and he came through big this series with 3 20-point games, including one of 29 and one of 27. And then, man, there's Derek Lively. And, dude, the growth we've seen from him from the start of this series to yesterday, I don't know if you can really put it into words. Remember in the first couple games, he kept getting stuffed at the rim, slammed at the rim, rejected at the rim. That dude was finishing at the rim yesterday, through traffic, through contact, everything. And I'm going to give you my thought, and you tell me what you think. I think when he missed those, and I'm basing this off of what Derek said, when he missed those first 3 or 4 free throws or 4 out of 5 and he was running on around the court trying not to get fouled, and Kyrie walked up to him and said, hey, man, just take the foul, go up there and knock the free throws down. And I believe I read that Derek Lively said, hey, I just kind of looked to my mom for those situations because his mom recently died about a month ago from cancer. And he made the free throws. This is just me. I think it really calmed him down. And I think this can happen when you're playing for somebody or something bigger than just yourself. And I think you can do things that you wouldn't normally think you're capable of because it's not just about you. And it gets you some fortitude that you may not have had. I often think about it like because I was in Columbus at the time and Buster Douglas is from Columbus. And it's hard for me to believe that if Buster Douglas's mom had not died about a month before the fight, that he would have won the fight. But because he was kind of fighting for her and her memory and something bigger than himself, when he got hurt or knocked down or whatever it was early, he was able to get up and recover because it wasn't about him. And so I think what a lot with Derek Lively is his mom's death has given him some strength that he draws upon right now. And while he's been good all year, I think it gives him a little more right now. And I find myself thinking about this, like, you know, this death thing is weird. And it's especially when it's a parent, especially when you're so young, it's very hard. It's very devastating. But right now he got some things to keep his mind off of it. And, you know, I was wondering if he had some other siblings or family, because when the season ends, it's going to get real quiet, man.
Yep.
And I just hope that he has something to fill them hours up when it gets quiet like that, because it's coming at some point, because he's been so busy in his basketball. I don't know, but you would think he hadn't really had that real grieving time. Mm-hmm. And that'll come later, and you just hope that and I would think that the Mavericks do know that it's coming, but that they got the support lined up then, because, you know, my point is now I think that moment where he thought about that, it just kind of helped him right now, and he's playing through her and doing some great things.
Yeah, I
hope all that made sense.
It makes sense to me, because I think of two people I didn't want to disappoint in my lifetime that passed away, my grandfather and my mother. And when they was here, I didn't want to disappoint them. And when they was gone, it was one of them things where I think about Lively, I think about yourself, I think about myself, I think about Dak Prescott. When people dog Dak, what's the worst thing done happened to Dak in his life? His mom passed away. Huh. That's why this shit that y'all say or we say, it don't bother him. It really don't. You know what I'm saying? Because the worst thing that could possibly happen to you done happen. And I think you draw strength from that. You know, so that's kind of the same thing. I think it's kind of along the lines of what you're saying. Because I always thought that about Dak. When the pressure, with the pressure and all of that other stuff, what's pressure when I don't have my mom? When I done buried my mom, what can y'all say to hurt me? What can you do to hurt me? And that's just how I feel about it. And I think you are exactly right. When the things calm down for Lively, I hope somebody's there. And then he got good teammates. And it's probably other people reach out to him. That's the club you don't want to join, that eventually everybody joins, is, you know, the I buried my mama club.
Right.
You know, it's just, I always say that. It's just the brotherhood you don't want to join, but there's plenty of people that reach out and talk to.
Yeah. But there's no doubt that he balled yesterday, 12 points, 15 boards, a physical presence, played good on defense. And I don't know about you, I was shocked. Somebody put this stat out yesterday, because it didn't feel like that to me. During the Oklahoma City series, Derek Lively was a plus 68, and Gafford was a minus 58. Did it feel like that when he was on the court?
Nah, but Gafford be taking more chances though. Gafford do a lot of. I mean, he don't really fill up the stat sheet all the time, but he make a lot of emphatic plays. You know, blocks. He's trying to dunk on somebody. He get to the line. It's just the difference between him being a veteran and Lively being a young cat. Because I think Lively gonna get to that. He just learning his way.
No, I'm saying he was a minus 58.
Yeah, you talking about Gafford?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He tried to do a lot more stuff. This is going to put you in the minus.
Oh.
So he make a lot more, you know what I'm saying? He make a lot more.
He got a lot more good and a lot more bad.
Yeah, because he going to put that thing on the floor and try to dunk on everybody.
Right.
You know, just playing. It's playing with aggressiveness and decisiveness that make you minus 58 sometimes.
All right, because I was I didn't get to feel that, like, put it like this, and I'm just judging off this last game. I got to feel that, okay, Hardaway Jr. out there, I see why he a minus whatever when his plus minus is what, because he ain't doing nothing. But I was like, it seemed like Gafford is doing something. I can't see why he's this or that.
That's what I'm saying. Anyway. He trying to do more. They don't allow Gafford to do more. I've seen Gafford put the ball on the floor. You know, he ain't supposed to be doing that. But he put the ball on the floor, two steps, he dunking. And it comes off the back of the rim. But you like, hell yeah, be aggressive. It might be a turnover. You know what I'm saying? Two, boom, boom, one dribble.
Okay, like dunk. This yesterday.
Yeah.
And see, I'm also going to, like, Chuck Cooperstein is my guy, the voice of the Mavericks. Like, I would text him this. Because, I don't know, it's true. Yesterday, Derek Gafford, just listen to this. 19 minutes, mm-hmm. 4-7 from the field, 10 points, 7 rebounds, 1 block. What's wrong with that? He was minus 25. That seems weird to me.
How many turnovers he have?
1. Derek Lively, 30 minutes. 5 or 6 from the field, 12 points, 15 boards, 2 turnovers, plus 26.
I don't know.
I don't know either, Doc.
It might be some of them 48 minutes per 48 minutes and all that crap. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. It's just weird to me. I'm sure he was probably on the court during that run at the end of the first half, and that accounted for some of it. But yeah,
what's in the equation? That's the question. What's in the equation?
No, it's just the score when you're on the court.
Okay.
I mean, this is like the basic. That's why it can't always be reliable, because it's literally what the score was when you were on the court.
There you go.
But anyway, it's just that's such a weird number to me that I like to ask somebody that's got a deeper understanding of basketball than me, like, does it mean something or is it just kind of a statistical fluke? But that's a deep dive on the Mavericks.
What about the block, though? You say nothing about the block.
What do you mean?
The block Shea tried to do on PJ. Shea blocks a lot of shots for a guard. So I don't see, you know, I understand why he tried to block it. But
He said it was a bad play.
Yeah, he said it was.
Given the situation and the circumstance, I should have just lived with.
Yeah.
But again, in the moment, I'm not finna just, because here what happened. If PJ lines up, hit the corner three, you would say, I can't believe I didn't try to block that thing.
Yeah.
So it's
But that's what I'm saying. If you look at his average, he blocks a lot of shots for a guard. So it's a possibility, you know, because I always, I'm a box score guy. And usually say it's like 2 or 3 blocks a game.
Right.
And I could see why he thought he could do it. Because he almost did. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was sitting there going, well, on one hand, this is before he said something. On one hand, it is bad to try to foul a guy like that. On the other hand, if it's anybody capable, it's him.
Right.
So,
right.
I don't know. It was crazy.
Let's move on to the block.
Moving on to the block.
Big day yesterday, dog. My granddaughter went to the prom. And so we had the big send-off at the house. Took a bunch of pictures. And she had on a really pretty royal blue dress. And she wore royal blue for something else. And I said, I didn't think royal blue or blue was your favorite color. And here go my granddaughter. It's not. It's the color I look best in. I said, well, I can't really argue with you on that if that's your thought process. Young man went as non-traditional as you could go. And I haven't really seen this look, so I give him credit for it. Whatever you think about it, it was a non-traditional look. Because he didn't wear a jacket. He had some kind of royal blue, I don't want to call it a sweater, but it's some kind of just long sleeve shirt on to go with some black slacks. Now he about 6'4". She about 5'3". And Doug, them pants must have been at the bottom of his calf, man. They were damn near capri pants. But I guess that's what and then they had on some royal blue shoes. I guess that's what the young folks are wearing these days. Matter of fact, I'm finna send you this picture. How would you describe this shirt, man? And I'm not saying it's a bad shirt, because it's not. I'm just saying I hadn't seen that look before. I guess it is kind of a sweater. But anyway, so I had a good time at the prom. And it reminded me of my prom. What do you remember most from your prom? And did you go to one prom or two?
I went to two proms.
All right. My brother went to, like, I'm not even exaggerating, he must have been at, like, I think he went to 7 or 8 proms. It felt like it. Matter of fact, let me text him, see how many proms my brother went to, because I think it was a ridiculously high number.
Well, you texted somebody else that picture, because you didn't send it to me.
Oh, I wonder who I sent it to.
I don't know.
Oh, I do know. I sent it to my barber.
Well.
Because I had helped her daughter with a project, and she sent me to finish the project this morning. So that was the last person on my text list. But thank you for that. I'm glad you informed me of that. I appreciate it. Very much so. Let me send you this picture right here.
But yeah, the first prom I went to was my prom. And then I just remember the suit didn't fit very well. And because
too
I was
big or too tight?
Everything was too big. 5'10", 190, but very stocky. As the last time I was under 200 pounds. And,
so you had the problem with big waist and, I mean, big legs and big ass and little waist?
Yeah, that problem right there. And then you could just, I don't know if other people could tell, I could just tell the suit was way too big.
Right.
And because they didn't tailor it. And the next year, I looked pretty good. And
now you go with the same girl both years?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what combination did y'all wear? You were straight black?
I think the first year was pink and white.
And then look at you.
The next year was white. I don't know if I had pink on. I don't know. I just know it was white. I don't know. I know the next year I had a black. I had a black one on. So, what's the curfew? What was the curfew? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, I didn't never had no curfew, man. And I didn't have a curfew because I was responsible. Meaning, if I told my mom I was coming home at 10, I came home at 10. If I told her I was coming home at midnight, I came home at midnight. And I knew not to say something later than midnight because that was going to be unacceptable. So so I know I had a curfew. And I didn't give my son a curfew because he was the same kind of kid as me in terms of, if he said he was going to be back at a certain time, he would be back at whatever time that was. So he didn't really need a curfew.
My son got.
And he also knew not to stay out too late.
My son got a curfew. Unacceptable. I gave my son a curfew.
What, midnight?
Have your ass back here at midnight. And one of my friends said, "What are you doing, man? You ain't going to let him hang out? You ain't going to let him? He going with his date? You ain't going to let him get some? What you talking about?" I said, no. If he going to get something, he should have got it already because his ass going to be back here at midnight. It don't make no sense. It do when he got his sister coming up right behind him the next year. Huh? You see? No, but she a girl. Oh, we going to play that? No, we not. That's not what we going to do. You understand? You want somebody to hate your ass for the rest of your life? You a girl. Bring your ass in at midnight when your brother got to stay out all night. No. I'm curbing him. Because I got her coming up. You understand?
Nah, I think that makes sense to me.
Hell
plus,
yeah.
I go to the next step, which is I myself, as an adult, this is real talk. I don't like to be driving on the streets after midnight. I damn sure don't want you, my inexperienced driver, out driving them streets after midnight. Because a whole lot of things can happen and it ain't your fault.
Driving is the last thing I'm worried about. That's the last thing.
Well, you know, I don't trust drunk drivers and people on the streets and all of that, man.
All right.
But, you know, it's whatever. The bottom line was they both had to be home by midnight.
Oh, yeah.
I wore, for my prime, I wore the black slacks, tuck slacks with the white dinner coat and the pink tie and cummerbund. And then my date wore the same pink thing. And we had a good time. Prom, I actually had a good time at the prom. Actually, I'm a poor dancer, but I actually danced a little bit. That's when Morris Day and the Time was jamming with the bird and all of that.
Yeah.
So,
man with no legs could be the bird.
They see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then we had a good time. I had to drive my godfather's. I was mad because my uncle would not let me drive his chocolate RX-7. Even though I was a valet at the Anatole, he wouldn't let me drive it. And so, and I think my car was at the time was like a 71 Volkswagen, and my mom's car was a Volkswagen. I didn't want to really rock that. I ended up driving my godfather's station wagon. So, I mean, I'm not sure that it really mattered, although it felt like it mattered back then.
No, I don't remember what was driven. I just remember being a courtesy clerk at Safeway. That's a sack boy, and making $3.35, making sure I had $56, $55 in change for Holiday Inn.
Oh,
let that sink in a little bit.
Man said $55 and some change for Holiday Inn. Boy, shut up.
Roger that. I don't know what's going on with you, but hey, I had that $55 two times. See what I'm saying? There you go. Shit, I don't know. Might have been.
No, I did not have the $55 two times.
Might have been the Sheraton. Man. Might have been the Arlington Sheraton or the Hilton in Arlington the second time. I don't know.
You could get in without an ID. You just had to pay.
Yeah, just pay.
I guess I was.
Don't let the ID.
I didn't know.
The ID stop you? Okay. Yeah, all right then. I guess you didn't drink nothing before 18. I guess you didn't go to no hotel before. Okay. Well, I drank more. I drank more before 21 than I did after 21.
Dude, you know, it's funny, man. Sometimes you get to be boys with people you went to high school after high school. I mean, you know them and stuff in high school. But you get to be boys after high school. I've done that with about 3 different people. And they be telling me stories of high school, and I'm like, what? Y'all was doing that? And they're like, yeah, where was you at? I was like, dog, I wasn't doing none of that. I mean, I had a girl, and we used to do what we did. But all that smoking, drinking, partying, I didn't do none of that in high school.
No, I didn't smoke. No, I ain't never smoked nothing. But the drink stuff, yeah, before 21.
Even the good girls in the class, you know, the class officers and stuff, they was all doing that. And I was just like, wow, I missed out. And it was wild to me, man. But apparently Skyline High School was the lick in the 80s. I don't know what it's like now, but it was the lick in the 80s. And I missed out on a lot of that lick, and that's probably good for me so that I could become a productive student and a journalist down the road, even though I had a lot of fun in high school. And I find it interesting. Would you classify your high school years as fun?
Meh? For the most part, fun, depending on what type of fun you want to have. My last year was cool. I had pretty supportive family. You know, ain't many right. that you met. She made sure that I did all the high school. She got on my ass 1 year because I wasn't taking nobody to homecoming. You're not taking nobody to homecoming? What you mean? I was like, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, I asked a girl to homecoming last minute. We had a good time. So, you know, it's just, she was, you know, my Aunt Rochelle was a cheerleader, so she was all into the social part. Then my Aunt Teresa was a teacher, so she was on my ass. Her and my mom was on my ass about academics.
Right.
Know? So, I had a lot of family support, and then everybody came to the game. Everybody,
right?
All the kids that are
that's good.
All of my cousins. It was kind of cool because during the game, I'd be on. You know, when I come off the field, somebody would say, "Hey, Joe, will you please turn around and wave to them 6-7 kids standing at the fence over there?" Because they keep calling your name. And I said, "Oh, okay." I turn around, hey, Joe. You know, it was kind of cool, man.
Yeah.
You know, even when I didn't play a lot at first, they was coming to the game. And then when I started, they came to the game. So it was cool. My family kind of made high school pretty good.
My son went to the prom. And he was part of that group of dudes that wanted to go to the prom by themselves. And I wasn't sure if that was because, I wasn't sure why that was. And my son is a secretive type. He don't want to get no answers about nothing.
Say that again. He did what?
He went by himself with another group of dudes, you know, 5 or 6 dudes. And they all show up and then check out all the ladies who are there, I guess, with their girlfriends. And maybe you pick from that group, or maybe you just want the freedom to dress how you want to dress, come in when you want to come, and leave when you want to leave.
Yeah, my oldest son did that too.
Oh, all right, cool.
My youngest son did that too.
Is that right?
Yeah. They was gameless, but that's a whole nother problem.
Well, mine wasn't gameless. That's why I was curious.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cause you know he'd had a girlfriend. He kept him for a minute.
Sometimes if you single and you got 2 or 3 girls that don't have a date to the prom and they all ask you because you single, a lot of time it's either your rejection or they rejection. You don't want to do that, so you just go by yourself. I've heard people do that.
It's been a couple years. I might ask him and get the truth.
Yeah, my two boys was gameless, so it's all good.
His big thing at the prime, I need to ask him what happened to him, was he had some Nike, Air Force Ones customized to match his suit. And that was his big deal for going to the prime. So I need to know if them. I think those shoes still exist. I think they're still in the rotation every now and then when it makes sense. But that was him. He had his own. He brought his own photographer, so he did his thing his way. But he came over to wish his niece a fond prom yesterday. So I was glad that he did that. But that's our trip around the block this week, man. Let's move on to one more quick topic before we get out of here today. And I don't know how you feel about this, and maybe you don't feel any way about it. But we're going to get to it in a second. But your Dallas Stars, did you watch any of their Game 6? It was a late one now.
No.
All right, man. You don't have to hesitate. This is no judgment zone.
No, I wasn't no hesitation there.
Because the Stars, I'm not looking forward to the Western Conference Finals where they're going to have these 9 o'clock face-offs, you know, game starts, whether it's Vancouver or whether it's Edmonton. Both of them bring their own list of deals. You got to deal with. But the Stars to me, man, and I put a video up on Clapper about this yesterday. The Stars literally, legitimately have what it takes to win a cup this year. And this is not, you know, hyperbole, and this is not, you're just getting caught up in the Stars hype. And no, they are, as you watch them play, man, they are legitimate cup contenders. They're in the Final Four. They finished with the second most points in the league behind the New York Rangers with 113. And here's why. They got the perfect blend of vets and youngsters. I mean, when we're talking vets, I'm talking about, you know, Joe Pavelski, and Jamie Benn, and Tyler Seguin, and Chris Taney, who they added at the trade deadline, and Matt Duchene, who scored the game winner in game six to send them to the Western Conference Finals, and a bunch of other dudes, all right? But then they got cats like Wyatt Johnston, the youngsters, and Jason Robertson, and Stankoven, and, I mean, Miro Heskinen leading the way. And then the goalie Ottinger. It's perfect, man. They got vets who can control the locker room, make sure the young cats don't panic if something doesn't go right. Then they got the young guys who can exert their will on a game or a series. And I'm telling you, dog, don't be shocked, surprised, nothing if they win the cup. I didn't say it was easy. It's not easy. It's hard. But they got everything that's required to win. They can score with you, because they got 8-20 goal scorers. Nobody had more. They could play defense with you. They have Colorado, which led the conference. That's right. Led the Western Conference with 304 goals. Was, I believe, fourth in the league in scoring. They held them to 13 goals in six games and no more than one goal in three of the last four. They can shut it down, man. And then they can score. So they got everything you need to win a cup. They got a coach who's proven. All they have to do is play the game the way it's supposed to be played and see where it falls. But they're dynamic. They're a terrific team. And, dude, they are they're dangerous now. So get ready to watch them make a run. Now, that leads me to another point, man. Before I go there, I need to say, you know, these West Coast starts at 9 o'clock, which we're going to see whether they get Edmonton or whether they get Vancouver in the finals. Those are hard, man. I tried to stay up to watch the Colorado game, and I set my watch at the end of the third period for a 15-minute nap because I wanted to see overtime. I woke up with 3 minutes left in overtime, dog. And so I saw them 3 minutes. And then it went to the double overtime. And I said, okay, let me try this again. Set my watch. I said, okay, 15 minutes. I'm going to wake up and see this double overtime. I woke up, and they was talking about the post game. It was in the post game show. I said, oh, so the Stars won. Then I tried to rewind it. And it was so deep in the post game show, it wouldn't go past the beginning of the post game show. So I actually got on my phone, looked on Twitter to see the game winner. And then I passed back out. And then the next day when I got back from the gym, I watched the first period. I mean, I watched the overtime period like I'd never seen it, this double overtime, to see how it all went down. I could do that. I know it's a little weird, but that's what I did. So I don't know how I'm going to hang for these West Coast starts in Edmonton or Vancouver, but we'll try to make it happen. And then I was going to ask you if you felt a certain way about this or if you just didn't care at all. So, you got the Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals for the second time in 3 years, all right? You got the Stars in the Western Conference Finals for the second consecutive year, third time in 5 years, including one trip to the Stanley Cup Finals against Tampa Bay. You got your Texas Rangers, who are their defending American League champs, even though they're struggling this year. In part because they've just been waylaid by injuries, just smashed. And then, my friend, we have your Dallas Cowboys, who have not played in a championship game in more than 10,000 days and 30 years. Now, so a lot of people have been putting GIFs up and making fun of the Cowboys. Do you feel any kind of way about the Cowboys having the city's longest drought?
Yeah, I said that on a previous show that everybody – you know, the Cowboys can take notes by getting past the first round from everybody. You know, they big brother called football is king. But big brother ain't won jack shit in too long, you know. And we ain't got past the first round in too long. So, it's yeah, we can learn something from the other teams out there.
I've always said what's most disappointing about the Cowboys is these other teams outside of the Rangers, who are a historically bad organization for a long time. But the Rangers did have a run from about 2010 to about 2015 where they were one of the best teams in baseball and went to the championship twice, even though they lost both of them. The Cowboys, the most disappointing thing about the Cowboys is that when they've had their best teams and their opportunities, whether it was last year or 2007 or 2014 or 2016, when they've had those teams, they haven't taken advantage of it and even gotten to the championship game. And to me, that, like, the Mavericks have a team this year, once we saw what the trade did, where he said, well, it's going to be hard, but I can see them beating the Clippers. They're 4-5. And, yeah, Oklahoma City's tough, but Oklahoma City's young, and I wouldn't be shocked if they beat, if they won the series. You know, I'm not saying it's easy, but I wouldn't be shocked if they won it. The Stars had the best team in the West, so, you know, them getting to the finals at one level was expected, even though they were playing the defending champion Knights in the first round, and it was going to be very tough. But the problem is the Cowboys have had several great teams, and I mean great. But at winning time and the playoff time, they've just fallen apart and haven't played their best football. And to me, that's just the most disappointing part. Because it's not like, you know, they like Detroit, which has sucked forever. Detroit's actually a good example. Detroit has sucked forever. Detroit got a good team, and what happened? Boom, win a championship game. They took advantage of their moment. And hopefully the Cowboys at some point will take advantage of their moment. But I don't know, man. And it feels like this is a pivotal year where it could get closer or it could get further away in a hurry.
Well, that's what I was saying about the Rangers, though. You got to be good at every level. Front office, the manager or slash the coach, and the locker room or the clubhouse. If it's, you got to be good at all of them. And so good above average, at, well, no, hell no. You got to be good at all of them. So the perception with the Cowboys is either the coach has been weak or, and I say the perception because you're going to know more about the, how they do business out there than I do, but the perception is that either the coach has been weak or the general manager is weak or the owner slash general manager. And then, you know, when they had Jimmy, they had the good owner, they had Jimmy, they had talent. At what point do you feel like the Cowboys have been good with all three of those things and not go past the first round? You know, 2007, what's that, Wade Phillips?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go right there. You see them.
2014, that was Jason Garrett. Are you going to say there you go right there?
There's a couple of years where the Cowboys have had the coach, and the coach just did what Jerry wanted him to do. To me, that was Jason.
2016.
Who is that?
That's Dak is the quarterback. Jason is the coach.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Jason. I mean, with Parcells here, was we talented enough? Probably. But the owner was kind of in the way, forcing players on them. I just think when you got a better chance of winning when everybody's doing their damn job. You get past the first round and you get the championship. The 49ers, they coach is pretty good. Even though, you know, he done screwed up a couple of things. He pretty good. The front office pretty good. The team is talented. You know, just like the Mavericks. Front office did a good job. The coach is doing a good job. The Mavericks are talented, you know. So that's just what I think. I think that's what hold the Cowboys back. They're either weak in one or two areas. And this year they might be weak in all of them.
Yeah, I don't know what this year brings, but I don't have a lot of confidence at this particular time that they're going to make any kind of run.
Yeah.
I think it's too much uncertainty. And,
to hear Clarence say 10-7, I couldn't even argue with him. And it's easy to argue with him.
No, I think it's a very difficult. It's a difficult schedule because, and this happens sometimes. You know, when you play the AFC North as the other division you're matched up against, it's a difficult schedule because all those teams these days are good.
Well, when I looked at it,
they're varying degrees of good, but they're good.
I thought it was a tough schedule, but then when listening to you and Clarence break it down. It's just, y'all break it down different than a lot of people because y'all lived that damn schedule. And he was talking about you got to buy here, you got this, this is an extra buy. I thought that was some good shit right there. So, you know, just going, where y'all go over the schedule, I think it's a lot different than what regular people do. And y'all was saying, you know, what was good about the break and how I can't remember the specifics, but I just thought it was a good breakdown.
I mean, that plays one role. And at the end of the day, you got to play the teams on your schedule. And at the other end of the day, or maybe at the beginning of the day, how about that? I told this to somebody the other day who was telling me, I don't think they're going to do this. I was like, no, we don't even know who's on the team yet. And you don't know the circumstances of when you play that particular team. Because the NFL is all about attrition. Are you playing the Eagles when Jalen Hurts is playing? Or are you playing the Eagles when Jalen Hurts is hurt and not playing?
Yeah.
I mean, that matters.
Or when they fighting each other.
Yeah. All of that matters. And so, you know, the schedule this time of year is a good talking piece. It's a nice guide. But we ain't going to know how it's going to break down until the season starts. This much we do know. The Cowboys can take a lesson from everybody else in DFW, because here's a dirty little secret, and Joe really hit on it. And maybe we'll go more in depth on it next week, because it's a good topic. If you look at the Mavericks front office with Nico Harrison and Jason Kidd, they've retooled this entire team. They've made it different. They've made it younger, more athletic, better. Okay, if you look at the Texas Rangers with Chris Young, they're a better team, a better organization. They got all this pitching and waiting in the wings. We'll see if he can come back healthy. But clearly, their front office is considered one of the best in baseball. And then, when you look at the Dallas Stars, I just told you, you can look at their farm system, the guys they bringing up, making impacts, the smart trades that they've made, and the coach who's 8-0 in closeout games, who's proven commodity, and it's clear that they're doing a great job. And then you look at the Cowboys, and yes, they've had a talented roster, but it's clear that, Jerry, winning is not the main thing with Jerry. It's up there, but marketing the team is the main thing with Jerry. Winning comes second. And you can tell that from all the decisions that they make that have nothing to do with football and everything to do with marketing and winning. I mean, they're making money. So until that flips, it's always going to be a little bit of a disconnect. And when we're talking about winning championships, it's the details that matter. And, until they flip it and decide that making money is not the first most important thing with being the Cowboys, they're going to struggle. Regardless of what they say, your actions speak so loud we can't hear your words are coming out your mouth. Period. Point blank. End of story.
Yeah, we all in.
I learned more about
Jerry Jones and his BS doing this show than I ever known damn time.
Hopefully you and a lot of other fans have been exposed to the truth. But now, we appreciate everybody today. Hey, don't forget, Jacques Talk Live debuts Wednesday on the Real Jacques Talk YouTube channel. Please subscribe, rate, and review. You can find the show also on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. You can follow me on Twitter, X, at JJT Journalist. Sorry, I had an old man moment there. And then I'm always on Clapper. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor is the handle. For everybody who's been a part of this one, until we chat again, for Big Joe and the Big Rig, you guys be blessed.